And welcome back to the Matt Matan Show, and I am very pleased to welcome back to the station Mr. Joe Woody. He is the publisher of Angler Magazine of the Carolinas, based in the Smoky Mountains, and welcome back to the show.
How you doing, Matt? It's good to talk to you.
It's good to have you on. It's been a while since the last time we talked on air, and you know, lots happened. You know, from a business standpoint, we're going to get into a lot of, you know, life journey stories and nature stories and everything else in our discussion today. But your expansion has been immense since the last time that we talked.
We keep growing. It's this, where we started from is just me and my wife just trying to figure it out in Western North Carolina with the Angler magazine. And now we're putting magazines out and have advertisers from both Carolinas, East Tennessee, Southwest Virginia, Kentucky. And, you know, we're to watch it grow from where it started is just pretty amazing. And,
yeah. So even my updated intro of Smoky, of saying Angler Magazine of the Carolinas, that's not even accurate anymore either, is it? It's beyond that.
It's hard to keep up with.
Yeah. You know? I was going to say Angler Magazine. That's it's going to be it.
You can only change your name so many times on your magazine.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but it's great, you know, and it speaks to, you know, there's always been a love of the outdoors, and especially in the Southern Appalachian Mountains. It's such a deeply ingrained part of our culture and history and lifestyle that, you know, it makes sense to be growth there. But also during COVID, so many more people reconnected with nature because nothing else was open. And when things started to reopen, people realized, yeah, I still like walking the trails and paddling and fishing and all these different things. And I haven't seen it slow down one bit for outdoor activities and outdoor locations since COVID restrictions started to lift. I haven't seen it slow down at all from the peaks that we hit during COVID.
You're right. You can just tell by the suppliers there during COVID, you couldn't get a lure. You couldn't get a fishing boat or a kayak. They had sold out everything.
Right.
And so people just got back in touch with their natural side or whatever you want to call it. And many of them, once they rediscovered that part of themselves, they didn't want to let it go. And you can see that to this day with the increase in hikers in the Smokies and the Pisgah National Forest and wherever you may be outside, people discovered that about themselves. And like you and I know, once you discover that about yourself and let it happen, it's tough to let it go. It's just letting it happen sometimes. Sometimes it takes a natural disaster or a change in your life for you to get in touch with that side.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how you first got in touch with nature, you know, in your own journey, you know, where your personal relationship with nature is a part of your being. It's a part of your living and breathing and continuing on. And was it something that you've always done from early childhood? Like, was it a family thing or did you discover it somewhere along the way?
It was a family thing. And by family thing, I remember when I was a kid, you know, barely able to walk, my father and my grandfather, who from this area, would have me out on a stream trout fishing or in a boat bass fishing or whatever that may be. And, you know, I loved it. I loved it. You know, sitting in a lounge chair fishing for trout with a Zebco and corn is fun, but for me it was fun and just mind-numbingly, I wanted to get out and walk the streams where their idea was to fish there and have a conversation. And that's what it basically was. I didn't know it at the time. They were talking to me and teaching me life lessons. I didn't know that at the time. And that kind of ingrained love of being out there just led to one thing or another. And I was in the Army for a while, I would take maps and just go find streams to fish off of maps that, you know, with no names. And I would do that, started doing that. And then we moved around to Hawaii and I started fly fishing for out there in Hawaii. And then we came back here and I just came to paradise. This is, I mean, if you haven't had a chance to get lost in the Smokies, there's a reason why there's millions of visitors there every year, because it's beautiful. The weather's not too bad one way or another, depending on where you go, the scenery and the greenery and the wildlife that you see. It's, you know, I said in a story a few months back, I wrote that even though I was born in Greenville, South Carolina, growing up, I didn't know about this place. Mm. And when I got out of the Army and we moved here, I had come home. You know, the Cataloochee Valley and other places in the Smokies and the Pisgah National Forest and right around here in Hot Springs. And those are the areas my family lived for generations. And it's definitely piqued my interest or rekindled the interest that I lost when I went in the Army and then regained it, then moved here. And then it just hit me like a tidal wave. You know, I had to be out every weekend. I had to find these things.
Well, and the other thing too, that people that haven't taken advantage of getting out there and exploring around is, you know, yes, we're a part of the Appalachian Mountains, you know, the Southern Appalachian Mountains and foothills, but there's different mountain ranges within the Appalachian Mountains, and they all are very different. The topography is different. The ecology is different. The fish are different. So you can go to one area of the Southern Appalachians and then another and be in a completely different style forest and different kind of fauna, you know, and different kind of, you know, the way that the landscape rolls or is grown over or all those different things. And so, you know, there's always somewhere new to explore. And in a lifetime, you couldn't see it all.
You couldn't. I had this idea around 2001, thereabouts, give or take a year. I read a book by Jimmy Jacob, just fly fishing the Southern Appalachians. And I said, I am going to go fish all those streams. I'm just going to go do it. I'm going to explore it. You know, and so I said, and if I do that, I pretty much got a handle on all the trout streams or wherever there is in the Smokies. 23 years later, I realized I have really just scratched the surface of places that you can get lost in these mountains. Just scratched the surface, you know, and I've probably traveled them more than most, not near as much as some. And that's the beautiful part about it. It's endless. I don't know.
And it changes too. That's the thing. You can have severe weather come through, and we know of the human cost and, you know, the hardship that comes from things like the flash floods and everything. You look at what happened in Haywood County and, you know, the Caruso area and things like that. On the naturalist side, it completely changes the landscape and the streams and the pathways and, you know, the passes and all that completely morph into something new that has to be remapped. You know, so there's that too. But I want to go backwards a little bit. Do you remember your first time going out into nature on an excursion on your own? Do you remember? And I don't mean just like a little afternoon hike. I mean, like, were you going out, you know, for a night or two or something like that, going into some deeper wilderness areas? Do you remember your first time doing that without anybody else with you?
Yes, I do. It was here. It was here. And I was in the Army for a long time. Did a lot of going back on maneuvers and everything, but never anything by myself. And I don't care what anybody tells you, going out in the woods by yourself, you get used to it, right? You get used to it after a while, maybe a little bit. But that first time out in the wilderness by yourself with no one around, it sticks out in your brain. You know, it's like every sound is amplified, you know, everything. The whole woods are coming in around you and you feel it, right? And
yeah, it almost feels ghostly in a lot of ways, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like I don't want to wax too much on stuff and, you know, kind of get people calling us funny names or anything, but there's definitely a spiritual component for me when I go out into nature by myself intentionally and getting away from any signs or contact with civilization. There's something very spiritual that I experience when I do that. And I don't always know what it's going to be or how long it's going to take, but I always, every single time I walk away with a rejuvenation or an insight or a creative idea, or there's something that I'm given a gift by going intentionally into wilderness and finding that space with nature. Mm-hmm. And something's given to me every single time that I go. And I can't help but wonder if, you know, when we bathe ourselves in God's creation, if it's not a clearer way for God to get a message or a little, you know, lifeline punch to your spirit or something like that. But there's something to it that for me, just in my life, has become as necessary as breathing. I've got to get out in nature once in a while, because if not, then I start to run on fumes, you know, for a gas tank analogy.
Yeah, it's rejuvenating. It's therapeutic. And if you listen, if you allow yourself to listen, some people can go out in the woods. I'm not saying who or whatever. Some people can go out in the woods for months at a time or everything, and they never have that experience, right? Never. And it's not a hit on them. It's not. Their minds, maybe I'm getting part of the hippie of west of Asheville or something here. I'm getting part of touch my inner hippie. But if you don't let whatever that spiritual occurrence happen, whether it be religious or nature or the combination of the two, whoever it is, you don't see it. You don't feel it. But, you know, and here's the hippie part. If you go out and you're open to things, let your mind go a little bit, you know, hey, if something weird happens, it happens, you know, that's when the weird stuff happened. Maybe it's me saying, hey, come on, anything happened to me. But the amount of experience that I have been fortunate to have while in our magical woods is just mind-boggling.
Yeah.
And it's enough to fill 10 books. And I can only think, I've just been out in the woods, these Smokies, for 23 years. To think of the people who are open to these experiences, who spent their lifetimes around Robbinsville, or around, you know, the backcountry of Bryson City or something like that. And they've gone out and spent months at a time out in the woods. I can only imagine the stuff that's happened to them, because,
well, in generationally,
there's magic back there.
Yeah, brother. And generationally too, you know, I talked about this with someone just recently, and I was saying, you know, with indigenous cultures, place is often more significant than time. Mm-hmm. And where a place has a sacredness to it and an importance to it that is not measured in time. So like when you're there at a certain place, it's not that you're there then, it's that you're there with everything before and everything after. You know, and so it's a powerful way to kind of look at, you know, places in nature and different hikes you might do or different mountaintops. And if you go by yourself or if you go with someone and create memories and things like that. And so do you find that when you go to a place you've been before that you get similar kind of experiences, or do you build on the ones before? Because if we go to some of those indigenous teachings and beliefs about place being more important than time, when you go to a place you've been before, everything that you experienced before and everything that you've heard that has happened there before, that's your starting point. And so you're there then, and you're there from the time before, but also you're looking when you might make another trip too. So you're there in the future too. I'm going real Asheville here. But you know, but again, I say it based on experience. I've actually lived these moments of insight. I remember, I'll give you an example. I went off of a very popular trail on Mount Mitchell, and it's to where the survey was done many, many, many decades ago. And you can still find the little survey marker, the little metal survey marker, and it's hammered into a stone that's up on the very top of this one little side ridge off of the trail. And I found my way to it, and I sat up there just quietly, and I was writing in my little nature journal some different thoughts and things like that. And a little tiny Mount Mitchell top miniature garden snake came out on the rock to get some sun next to me. Didn't care. It just laid out in the sun with me right next to the marker. And I'm sitting there going, I'm on this boulder next to a little metal marker that was put there almost 100 years ago. And here's a snake that's hanging out on the same boulder where people were standing that did the survey, that is still the same place that little garden snakes 1,000 years ago were going to go, you know. And there's just, and all of a sudden I can hear, like you talked about, Mount Mitchell, when you first go up there, can be very quiet. It can seem like a very ghostly woods. But if you stop on a trail and you just sit quietly, all of a sudden you realize there's more noise going on than a city, you know, but it's faint and you have to be quiet. And the quieter you are, the quieter you are and the stiller you are, the more the noisemakers come to life, the more you recognize the sounds of the winds coming up the sides of the mountain, you know, the upgusts and things like that. And so for me, Mount Mitchell is one of those places that it's not going anywhere. You know, it's been there a long time. Same with Cadillac Mountain at Acadia National Park in Maine. Those are kind of my two geological bookends of my battery. You know, it's Cadillac Mountain, not going anywhere. Been there for millennia. Mount Mitchell, not going anywhere. Been there for millennia. One of the oldest mountain ranges in the world, and it's still there, you know. And so I've tried to create a lot of memories at both of those locations with my kids, and now I have a granddaughter coming. And I know that long after I'm gone, my kids and their kids will be able to share in stories that I'm sharing with them, but also I've shared stories like Cadillac Mountain about my great-grandparents being there with them when I was a kid. You know, so again, place more important than time. And I don't know why I got on the tangent. I'm supposed to be interviewing you.
This thing about nature, when if you spend a little bit of time out there, you don't have to spend a lot of time, but there, when you share that openness about it, this, when you start talking about it and you feel comfortable with someone, the stories just flow over you and you want to tell these things. And, you know, that's what's led me, fortunately, have an outlet. You have an outlet for it. You know, I can write these stories and publish it in The Angler. And I can write a book. I've got an outlet. But you're right, the stories just flow over you, man. You got to tell them.
Oh, and you've got some stories to tell, too. I mean, we both do, but you're out there so much in the wilderness. I watch on YouTube, I like to watch expedition-type shows. Especially Northwoods shows, yeah, because that's my comfort zone. And the Southern Appalachians are a lot like Northern Woods of like upstate New York, New England, Southern Canada. You know, Mount Mitchell, for instance, it's the same ecology. It's the same forest as you get in Southern Canada. And one of the things one of the hosts said recently, a boat full of guys went by, and he hadn't seen any people for 4 days. And this boat of four guys went by drinking and trolling and everything, and once they passed by and everything, he was real paranoid. He was like, I find that I'm more afraid of humans than I am of nature. Do you get that feeling when you're out there by yourself in nature? Do you have encounters with people where you know, it kind of feels out of place or something like that? I'm just wondering, because you spend so much time out in nature, if when you intentionally go out into those wild areas, if human encounters become stressful, where even though in real life, you know, you're around people all the time.
Well, it's again, I don't know how much time we have, but, you know, there's been quite a few, and that we're going to be doing a TV show and some podcasts here in the next few months. It's going to touch on that. And there was one encounter that it's just mind boggling to me. And actually the funny thing about it is that there's TV shows about it. Now, it came on this morning, and I was sitting there. I don't know what I was doing, something, and the show came on called Blood Mountain, the David Hilton story. And, you know, I don't know if you know about this guy, but he's the guy that killed the older couple in the Pisgah National Forest, and then he killed the lady going up Springer Mountain in Georgia, and then he killed another person in Florida. And, you know, he's a real bad dude, just an evil guy. My son and I took him, we went and rented a canoe because I didn't have a boat at the time. Okay, hey, we were in a canoe out of Fontana Village on Lake Fontana. And we rented a boat and we're going over into Eagle Creek. It was December-ish, couldn't tell you the date, 2005-ish, my son's 8, 9. And we come into Eagle Creek there. The water's way down because it's wintertime. We have to go over the mountain, the big cliff on the right, going down to the creek. We come into the first campsite, and there's this man there, right? There's this man. He's putting his tent together. And so my son's with me. I holler at him, hey, we're coming through. We're coming through, right? We're coming through. And he said, okay, come on. So I walk up, and as, you know, when you meet people out in the woods and you're you kind of judge them and that sort of stuff. So I just kind of talked to them and said, hey, we're just going up fishing. We'll be back and this sort of stuff. And he was telling me stories about he came in from the road to nowhere, had walked for 3 days through 2 feet snow drifts and didn't have shoes to cross the water. And he crossed the water and he was here and he had about 4.5 miles to finish his trail. I said, cool, man, we're going fishing. So my son and I walked up for, we weren't going for maybe 1.5 hours, 2 hours because it was really cold that day. We come back. This guy is still trying to put his camping gear together, camping stuff together. I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of weird. What's going on here? And so I said, hey, coming back through. We come back through. I said, look, man, I don't know why I said it. I'm still kicking myself for this time. I said, look, man, we've got a boat. I know you want to move, finish your hike. Go ahead and finish your hike. But if you want to go back across the water with us, come on. Without hesitation, he said, yes. I was like, doggone it. I didn't really say doggone it, but I was like, what did I just do? Right. And so this guy packs his stuff up because he still can't put his tent together. He gets his tent together and we wait on him. And me and my son start following him up over this high cliff with this big ledge off to the left. And I stopped. I turned around, looked at him and said, man, go ahead of us. Because the thought in my mind was this guy could push us off here easily and steal our boat. Why was I thinking that? I don't know. Maybe because it was too. Anyway, come across, he gives me this story. I write a story about him doing it when I'm doing these stories about fishing in the Smokies on my maps that I was publishing at the time. And fast forward, when the lady and the man disappeared in the Pisgah National Forest, and they were talking about this, they found him. Up pops his picture, and it's that guy.
Yeah, that terrifying. Guy.
No question that it was David Hilton. To this day, I'm still looking. I saw it this morning. I was like, it sends shivers down my spine.
Yeah.
So, turns out there's somebody that's missing named Ramona Milani out of Bryson City. The last time they saw her was with a man buying camping gear in Bryson City in December. Last time they saw her. I ran into this guy in December 2005 trying to put new camping gear together. Mm. Right? And the only reason that, you know, we're witnesses to him that he didn't touch us because I looked the part. You know, I've got a beard. I'm kind of rough. I've got a big knife hanging off my.
You got your Crocodile Dundee knife hanging off the side. Yeah,
that's a knife. You know.
Yeah.
And so he's looking for easy targets, and it's terrifying. Type of things, Matt, that on a regular basis happen out there. I don't want that put that on anyone, but you know, bears, mythology, missing people, serial killers. It's a crazy place, and it's an adventure every time you hit the woods, man.
Well, and you know, and what I would say is that things are more epic in nature. So the encounters with stuff like that, as rare as they may be, it's usually not going to be a halfway thing, you know, but the overwhelming majority of experiences are just as extreme in the kindness and the giving nature and the camaraderie of people that are complete strangers. And you meet them, like you said, you meet somebody in the woods, you make a quick judgment of them. Well, 99 out of 100, there's going to be an instant connection. You're both out there. You have intention in the woods. And I've overwhelmingly, 99.9% of the time, it's a very positive thing. But like you, that story, that epic story you just shared, when your senses are higher and more alert about sound and smell and everything, there's something else in your senses that picks up too. There's like this weird kind of like sixth sense vibration awareness of things around you. And you pick up on that from people. You know, when you encounter them, and you just wonder what life might be like for society if we had a more, you know, a closer, more intimate relationship as individuals with nature around us. You wonder what society might be like right now if there was more omnipresence of nature experiences and stewardship in the general population.
Yeah. That's it takes a while to get to that point. I think it's you know, the get having your mind ready for that. Or maybe that's maybe me being you have to be able to willing to let your mind go to that spot.
Yeah.
To get there. And many people aren't. And I'm not saying I'm some guy that's open, you know, open myself up to everything that nature has to give it. But yesterday I went into Biggie's Fork up off the parkway, and I was going to go find this stream, you know, Greasy Branch Prong. And, the whole trip in there, you know, I was in a hurry. I was in a hurry and I'd gotten my stuff because it's about 3 and I knew I had about a mile and a half to walk, and I was trying to get there and all this stuff. And when I got to the river, I realized I hadn't done my preparation. By preparation, I like to sit there for a minute. And I don't, some people call it meditation, whatever you want to call it. I call it just listening. Just listen for a second. Just sit there on a rock or on your truck or, you know, next to a tree and just listen. Breathe a little bit, you know, and just let it come in. Give it a few minutes. Just give it a few minutes and you will hear it. You will hear the birds whistling gets louder. You know, the rustling in the leaves becomes clearer. The wind coming through the forest, you hear it. The smells, you sense things around you. I'm not saying that's magical. I'm just saying you're becoming aware of what is around you. So once I got to the creek, I realized I hadn't done that. So I just sat down, you know, and relaxed, took a deep breath and said, okay, show me what you got. You know, and that I would advise everybody to do that.
Mm. What do you take away other than, you know, the rejuvenation that happens when you're in a location like that in that state of mind? What do you sometimes walk away with it when you come back out of the woods or off the water? Is there something that you, are there certain things that you typically will come away with?
It's clarity. It's not all your problems are fixed. They're not. You know, there's the problems that were there beforehand are still there afterwards. But a lot of times you get clarity, whether you're looking for the Great Spirit or Jesus Christ or whatever you want to look for out in nature. You get in touch with it a little bit more. And if you ask the right questions and you're open to it, clarity comes. Oh, you know, you can almost sense it in your mind. Oh, there it is. I get it. You know, your heart rate, unless you're walking up straight up a hill, go down a little bit. You just got a clearer head once you get out of there and you come back into society. And, That's my therapy. That's the way I look at it. Other people may look at it differently, but I look at it that way.
Well, I think that, you know, your attitudes toward it reflect also in Angler Magazine. I've seen it evolve over time to where there's a lot more experiential stories and articles.
Yeah.
Whereas early on, there was a lot of instructional content, which is great too. I mean, there's, you know, and there's still great insights on if you're an experienced angler or if you're just wanting to get started, there's useful information there for you. But there's a lot more of the, you know, the experiences, the stories that come from, you know, immersing yourself into an activity in nature and everything. And I think that, you know, getting to hear from you in this interview, if other people have also picked up on that evolution of Angler Magazine over the years, I think that's a reflection from the top down. You know, I think as you've continued to invest your time and your sweat equity into those experiences and being willing to share them like you have here today, that's also manifesting itself into the vibe of the magazine, which I think is a beautiful and wonderful thing. Because like I said a little bit earlier, I think if more of us can find a way to invest a portion of our clock into those serene kind of natural moments, the better off all of society will be, and the better stewards will be of the nature around us as well.
Mm-hmm. I agree 100%, Matthew.
What's the best way for people to go ahead and find Angler Magazine or check it out online?
We have a distribution plan on our website, the Angler Magazine, Great Smoky Mountains. And there's a distro plan there, a little drop down. It'll show you where all the spots you can pick them up. Anywhere from Cabela's in Greenville and Newport to Sportsman's Warehouse to the Walmarts to Davidson River Outfitters, hotels, real estate offices, guide shops. You know, it's about 500.
It's everywhere.
Yeah. But we try to put it in places where people will pick them up, and we monitor that pretty good. If we put them in a place, we put 30 magazines in a place somewhere, and we come back and there's 25 left, we move that spot because people don't pick them up there.
Right.
So,
right. Well, you know, and I've had some wonderful encounters with folks where they've recognized my columns in the magazine, you know, my River Reflections column, which I've been doing for, goodness gracious, it's been a number of years now.
Right?
It's been quite a while. But you know, it's really awesome because most every time that I'm approached in public, it's due to radio. Mm-hmm. For obvious reasons. I mean, I've been doing it forever, you know. But the occasional person that'll come up and, like, you know, want to talk to me about Angler Magazine and share stories like that, they see me light up like a firecracker, mm-hmm. you know. And it's like, oh, I love it. And there's always just such good vibes from people. And you know, I want to invite people to, you know, tap into that. And by picking up the Angler Magazine, and I appreciate you providing that as a platform for me all these years to write my reflections column that I write in Angler Magazine. So thank you for that. And then also thank you for taking the time to sit down and talk with me today and with the listeners of the station.
Well, thank you for inviting me. Anytime you want to share stories and talk, and just
next
let
time
me
let's
know.
Do it around a campfire.
Yes.
We'll bring a remote recording thing out because then the stories will really fly.
Yeah, they really start.
And we'll have to do post-production edits because the language might too. All right, Joe, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for coming on.
Take care, Matt. Right. Thank you.
Right. Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you liked what you just heard, be sure to subscribe to the podcast and be sure to visit bizradio.us to find hundreds of other engaging conversations, local events, and more.